The Milwaukee Bucks are neck deep in plans for the resumption of what was shaping up to be a magical season, preparing to head to Orlando at the end of this month with the NBA's best record. What broadcasts might look like, how sponsors can be integrated, ways to engage fans, and the logistics of a Disney World trip that they hope will carry into October, all are on the agenda. And if starting back up in the face of a global pandemic weren't unprecedented enough, on Sunday, the Bucks coordinated a protest march of about 7,500 people that included most of the roster as well as team and arena employees through downtown Milwaukee. We'll talk about the road back to basketball and through civil unrest with Milwaukee Bucks president Peter Fagan on this episode of SBJ Unpacks. I'm Bill King, joined now by Milwaukee Bucks president Peter Fagan. Peter, I know I don't need to remind you of this, but for anyone who may have forgotten, because it has been a little while, the Bucks had the best record in the NBA when the season shut down in March. As you've been involved in conversations about what a resumption would look like, what did you and your ownership group want that to look like? And what do you think of the way it turned out with, in essence, 22 teams, a round of play-ins, everybody in Orlando, pretty much a bubble environment is what you got. What did you want?
Well, I think, you know, you win over 50 games in March and you're really kind of the goal of that regular season is how do you get home court advantage? How do you get as much time possibly as you can off between games? What are ways to really, you know, into, you know, the vibe of being able to pick what uniforms you're going to wear, you know, during what game. So all these little nuances, you know, are kind of out of the window, but I think like the rest of the world, there are much bigger picture, much bigger kind of solutions going on. So number one, the fact that we're resuming is fantastic. And I think everybody's pretty excited about the ability for us as really a team with a chance at a championship. And you know how fragile that is. Like right. It just doesn't happen in those windows. So I think when we think about it, I think if we're down around 5,000-10,000 feet, you know, we're a little concerned. We want every advantage. How can we get competitive advantages that we might have had if we were the number one seed? When we get a little bit higher at 20,000 or 30,000 feet overview, we sit there and say, like, this is all great. Like, we've got a championship caliber team. We're able to go for a championship. We've got to go through everybody, you know, to get a championship, irregardless at some point. So let's, you know, let's get in shape, let's get together, and let's get ready for Orlando. You know, I think it's the organization's real kind of driver.
I want to spend most of the conversation with you today talking about resumption. But with the events of the last 10 days, I don't want to ignore what transpired in Milwaukee just yesterday. About 7,500 protesters gathered at your building, Fiserv Forum, at your invitation, not only gathered there, but gathered there at your invitation for a rally and a march, which your organization coordinated and participated in, along with players. Tell me about how that came to be and how it went. Because again, it was not just players. This was your organization and coordinated by your organization, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I think like the rest of the world, there's certainly a lot of awareness and a lot of hurt and following up from George Floyd's murder. And, you know, as an organization from our ownership down, we've really been beyond vigilant about supporting social justice in a lot of different ways. But, you know, this hits home. You know, a little bit over 2 years ago, Sterling Brown was a victim of police brutality right. in our home of Milwaukee. Of which was, you know, kind of example one of an organization really circling the wagons.
Sterling Brown, one of your players.
Sterling Brown, one of our players, you know, was wrongly arrested and a victim of brutality. It was filmed. It was kind of our first episode really internally of just being shaken, you know, in a big way. So we've kind of been around this, you know, personally for the last two years in a big way. And I think, you know, as the world kind of is aware of Black Lives Matter, as the world starts becoming, you know, aware of the injustices and the inequality, you know, an NBA team has a powerful platform and certainly has a voice. And I think our owners are pretty outspoken about how we really have a responsibility to be a part of change and affecting change. So very simply for us, it really started with the players and it really started with our 300 full-time employees who, like a lot of other people, were hurting, wanted to express themselves, wanted to get something done. Our players wanted to wanted to march with the employees to come down. Obviously, when you do something with an NBA team, it becomes much bigger very quickly. We announced it at about 9 p.m. the night before for a 1 p.m. march. Every one of our players in town was there early and ready. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of one of those moments where it's not only cathartic and impactful for all those others involved, but for us organizationally, it's just another example of like when you talk about what are great elements of teams and organizations, that's it. I mean, everybody comes together. That march had about, you know, a little bit over 1,000 employees, you know, part-time and full-time for the Bucks and Fiserv Forum. So that was like one of those historic moments, you know, for us as well.
Was that the first time a lot of you have seen each other face-to-face in a long time?
Without a question. I mean, it was, I think it was kind of getting back to school. The first day at school, everybody was very excited to just, you know, almost go. And we take, you know, we're basically, you know, still in isolation, especially on the player and coaches and performance side. You know, we are gloves and masks and 6 feet apart and everything. So the interpersonal, you know, kind of connections and the, you know, there are no hugs and there are no high five, maybe some elbow bumps, but I think it was also kind of like the real emotion of it is all being back together personally again. Some people have had one-on-one workouts and kind of sporadically opened up our training center, but this was kind of one of the first times we met in the locker room, you know, of the arena, and you could just tell how excited everybody was to be with one another.
Your decision to, again, actually coordinate the march, not even just participate, but coordinate. Tell me a little bit about that, because we have, you know, in conversations I was having with people across sports, there was a sense last week that, yeah, you can issue a statement, but a statement in and of itself might not be what people are looking for right now. Did you have that conversation internally, and how did you land on where you landed?
Well, I think it was a combination of the organization. And then once we circled the players up with ownership, it was one of the things the players like didn't even question. They were like, we got to get out there. We've got to express ourselves. I mean, one of the deliverables we really talked organizationally is like not only how we're hurting, what we're feeling emotionally, what the disparity of equality is, you know, as we sat down and talked, but like the urgency to affect change, where some of the long-term things we're doing and the short-term things where we want to get out there and march. And then that came like almost directly from Giannis, directly from Sterling Brown, directly from Wes Matthews, who were kind of the vocal leaders of, we want to get out there. And we just kind of looked at them and said, we're there, let's go. Like, let's make this happen.
On to Orlando. What can you salvage? Right? You got 22 teams converging upon Orlando. You will get some regular season games out of this. What can you salvage from a revenue perspective, particularly now that you'll have those regular season games? I know some teams had not yet met the minimum number of games in their RSN deals. I would think that with as many times as you guys are on national TV, you might very well be one of those. Did you need this to get there? And what are the revenue benefits of getting these regular season games, along with obviously the national revenue that'll come, but these regular season games?
Yeah, I think it's been discussed. I mean, as a league, we are hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, in the hole, I would say, as we go. Just imagine the games missed, the ticket revenues, right. You know, the hundreds of games missed, the ticket revenues, the sponsor revenues, the food and beverage, the parking, you know. But what this does immediately is solve, you know, and be able to recoup some of the media, you know, both on the regional network side for a lot of teams and certainly on the league national side for a lot of teams. I mean, we're able to actually broadcast the content, which means we don't go into the following years with big credits due to our national broadcast and to our local. So right away, you know, any kind of redemption on that is terrific, you know, just on a pure business P&L side. To get it done. I think, you know, as a league, we're looking for what are other parts that kind of save. If you think about it, you know, the ability to play games is the ability to all of our patch partners still get their value to get it. You know, what we're really focused on is how do we really maximize things like our digital, like our social? What are some signage opportunities on a local level for teams in Orlando as this gets going? And this is all very new. I mean, we Right. talked before the interviews, like talk about things that have never happened before. So we're imagining and reimagining different ways to create value and execute with what will probably be, you know, what I would call a world feed on all these games. So Right. if you think about the way Summer League is done, you know, there's one feed that'll be distributed out to the locals and the nationals and the international broadcasts. And how do we work that and how do we figure that out, which is what we're doing to get it. So it is definitely a huge step forward to get it. I mean, we will still not, you know, recoup the revenue lost for playing home games, which is significant, and we will certainly take a big loss for the 1920 season, which is just you can't avoid
right
because of what has happened. But this is definitely good news.
So how do you make the most out of those? We'll call them local broadcast slots, right? Because you will have inventory there. And what are you hearing from sponsors and the RSNs around demand for spots in those games? When this first happened, you know, I had a conversation with somebody who told me that that there will be a ton of sponsors and only a little bit of inventory. Is that the case, or because of the economic situation we see right now? Maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think like you finally have, like, if you just think traditional RSN spots in broadcast, you're definitely going to be tight. I mean, that's why I think we're all kind of desperately working for ways to think about how to expand the broadcast, how to create other content in and around. I mean, the nice opportunity, you know, if you think about things like The Last Dance and viewership
right.
on anything related to sports, is there's a real opportunity to take the games as the primary platform and take some ancillary, you know, content in and around that. Mm-hmm. So how do we relaunch basketball and at the same time really kind of expand the platform to create more content?
So with no home games, what can you do locally to engage fans? I mean, you guys have had a few months now to think about this, right? And I'm sure there've been a lot of whiteboard sort of, you know, what ifs. What do you think is possible out there? What can you do to engage fans when, you know, the team is not going to be around?
So it's a really interesting question, because as you can imagine, much like we think about the importance of social justice and marching yesterday, we also thought about the real importance of COVID and separation and isolation and health and wellness. Same kind of interesting thing where we're thinking, where the easy answer is event driven. You know, how do we use our arena, even if we execute social distancing? How do we bring 2,000 or 3,000 people in and create, for example, a viewing party
right.
that creates that type of event? How do we do the same? We happen to own and operate the 30 acres around the arena as the Deer District. So how do we activate and monetize all those different parts? What we're trying to figure out is, you know, is that a possibility kind of with what's going on with the world right now? And how do we execute the event-driven opportunities? And at the same time, you know, what we've done is we've created over the last 3 months a platform called Bucks Live, which is really our streaming over-the-top proprietary platform, which without COVID we'd never have been able to do. But that's another example of how do we drive viewership and engagement for folks, like in and around and between the games, for that second screen experience as we get forward. We certainly think there are opportunities, you know, not as great, but you know, if you continue to win and you continue to march to the playoffs, like what are the retail opportunities? Well, a lot of them are going to be mobile. Mm-hmm. You know, mobile driven and online, but you know, there's still a local opportunity, you know, to drive some retail as well. But none of the opportunities will come close to, you know, what it would be like to pack an arena with 18,000 people at capacity, you know, on a given day with paid tickets, food and beverage, parking, suites, you know, things like that.
Tell me a little more about that OTT platform.
We have, and a lot of folks have done it. You know, Monumental Sports in Washington does right. the greatest. I mean, they kind of run their own over the top. For us, we're having a hard time, other than just, which a lot of teams have their traditional app, a lot of teams have their social feeds. What we wanted to do is really have an overlay that, you know, for lack of a better analogy, was a channel. you know, and how do people tune into that channel, and how do we make it a depository for content and curate content on it? And we're figuring it out in a big way. But for us, it's just what you think. Like, how do we make it, you know, sticky so people stay there? How do we give, as a team, real experiential inside proprietary content that mm-hmm. makes it special to drive people? And then, you know, of course, how do we leverage it and drive revenue against it?
Every time that people are talking about won't be around, I keep thinking, well, will we see, you know, as a Zoom appearance by players with certain sponsors? You know, could you do things like that from Orlando?
Without a question. I mean, I think you're going to be seeing, I mean, the interesting thing we just had a talk internally about is, you know, what is going to be the way we operate in Orlando on the communications and social side, because nobody's traveling. You know, so right. you're not, everybody's going to be literally under the same, you know, bubble on the same campus. And there'll actually be more time than you think to have access to and activate players. And are there ways to, you know, which you would never do during the playoffs, mm-hmm. you know, for a simple form of, you know, what does Tuesday morning coach's corner look like, you know, for the weekly snapshot to get it done? I mean, just things you could never imagine doing during the normal NBA playoffs. You might be able to really, you know, have scheduled content that you never were able to do before. And how do you have players? And now we've got all of our players, you know, on Zoom and Teams and all that things. Like, how do you create group chats that you let fans into? I mean, right. those are pretty incredible types of experiences. And we've done them with our sponsors, you know, we've certainly done them with our staff in a big way. And we think the fans' engagement is just that next level, you know, of how do you have several thousand people, you know, on a group chat, you know, on a video conference, with players and coaches, which is pretty cool. We've got a town hall scheduled for next week with a couple thousand people, which should be interesting.
It is interesting. So you lose a small percentage of home games, and certainly there are losses. There's all kinds of losses that are going to come from what happened this season. But you think about the impact on next season as well. And I wonder, you know, from where you guys sit, I suspect with the season you're having, I would think you were really far along on renewals. You're having the best season in the league. Usually that's going to turn into a really high conversion rate, and it's usually going to happen pretty early. But at the same time as we have a pandemic, we have an economic crisis, right? Along with a health crisis, a renewal from March may not be a renewal today. So how are you guys handling that? The refund and renewal conversation, what are you encountering?
I think it's a whole new world. So take a team like the Bucks, or take a winning team in general that, you know, can go deep in the playoffs with the prospects. They usually renew at a rate in the high 80%, low 90%, you know, and sometimes, you know, to the 100%, you know, in like revenue. So that's totally changed, and that's totally different, because you've got a lot of people, you know, you've got existing customers that you're giving the opportunity to see, wait, and what happens, you know, and keep some of their money on, you know, on account
right.
to really go forward. And I think, you know, one of the answers is I'm not sure, because the truth is, like, I'm not sure when fans will come back to the arena
right.
To get it done. I think if we go to October 12th, there's a good chance, you know, we don't start till sometime in December. And if we start in December, where will we be in the world, you know, with COVID
right.
and a resurgence and everything. So I think for us, what we want to do is be completely fan centric and really allow people to keep their locations, which is important to them, you know, during a crisis like this, and to pay and really take it as it goes. You know, I think no matter what happens, I would be shocked if there's not a phase in period
right.
where we, for example, you know, here's 25% of the arena, here's 50% of the arena, here's 75%. I think as you're phasing in, all normalcies might be thrown out the window, you know, to get that done. That could have everything to do with season ticket holders. It could have, you know, kind of experimental, this isn't really how we're going to operate to get it done, but we will figure it out. We've been beyond transparent in real time with all of our season ticket holders and package holders. A lot of that transparency has been like the world, you know, it's so fluid. Mm-hmm. We don't know the answers, but we certainly have the opportunity for people to move their credit, to get refunds, to have conversations and figure it out, because it's a time we've never seen before. You know, we're not sure what's going to happen.
You are an arena guy at heart, I know. Thinking ahead to how arenas and the fan experience will change coming out of this. I mean, we know they're going to change. You have until the start of next season to figure that out, but I'm sure you've been working on it already and had lots of conversations, lots of discussions, lots of planning. What do you think some of those changes will be? What are you planning for already?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I volunteered myself, which I sort of regret, but it's been fantastic to help lead the reset committee for the league, you know, and the 30 teams. And that's been beyond a learning experience. So, you know, there's business continuity, and then there's obviously operations. And in operations, you think about everything from the fan experience to security to wellness to food and beverage to entertainment. You know, and I think the number one thing that's going to happen, you know, is – you know, think about, you know, the reduction of touch points, thinks about the reduction of, you know, people, you know, connectivity, you know, when you do food and beverage, you know, for us, which might be a great opportunity, you know, we'll be completely re-engineered, you know, mm-hmm. so it will not be, you know, touched by three people, you know, before you get food. I think one of the technology be like extremely interesting. I mean, we're almost kind of 90% mobile to begin with, and almost 100% with tickets. But I think, you know, the way you're not going to navigate your experience from your doorstep to when you get back home is really going to be on mobile to everything. So, you know, how do you have your seamless, you know, virtual parking to your pre-ordered food and beverage to your ticket administration to like what your activities are in and around the arena to get around, you know, how can you gauge bathroom volume, you know, when you're in your seat to see where you want to go. And then I think there's the easy stuff, which I don't think is easy, but the ebb and flow of how to move, you know, a lot of people at volume is egress and ingress and what directions they're going. I think a little thing, but would really change is I think at least until there's a vaccine, until there's real safety, I think your admission into large arenas and stadiums are going to be timed. You know, mm-hmm. Bill, you'll have a 7:15 to 7:20 entrance time.
Like a Disney Fast Pass.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So those are all kind of things. And the neat thing that we have is we are forced to rethink almost every part of the business, which is kind of exciting and kind of an opportunity, kind of also a major pain in the butt. But The world will change dramatically. That is for sure.
Last thing I wanted to touch on with you, how have you and your organization managed? You talked about just finally getting to come together, you know, for Sunday. Have you managed being apart?
That's been pretty incredible. We kind of had maybe a 2-week advance on understanding that something might happen. You know, we were, I don't know if the world knew, but, you know, Golden State, you know, the next day was planning on a fanless game to go forward. So the league was kind of getting prepared for what would a possible COVID, you know, kind of phased out look like. So we were all connected. We had an emergency plan for people working remotely on the business side. We had certainly understood like what it meant to shut down the physical plants of the buildings we own and manage, whether the bars, the restaurants, the medical office building, to our training center and our gym. But it's really been, you know, constant communication. I think one of the things we've done is the discipline of keeping schedules. You know, we've got managers talk with their direct reports every week. There are definitely department meetings, and there are definitely group things, which we may have done like on a monthly basis. We now do on a weekly basis. So what are our updates? Where are we doing for town halls? If nothing else, to give people information on health and wellness, to where we're doing as a business, to what the reality is of what's going on with the league, to get and the concert business, because that's the other part of the business that you know, we're navigating for the future. But, you know, overall, it's been, how do we, you know, I think there's a real importance all of a sudden with what your weekly updates are as leaders of a company. People actually read them now in a big way, and there's a big big focus on how do we engage and talk and not let, you know, our team members get lost, you know, in isolation.
Well, Peter Fagan, president of the Milwaukee Bucks, I know you're looking forward to having that, once again, best record in the NBA team back on the floor. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much.